Hey, everybody. Welcome to a brand new Film Vault. Before we get started, we decided that we should tack on some little intro here because the episode you're about to hear, a brand new one, but we recorded it last week because Brian apparently is having luau's with his wife, which I didn't even know about. So we had to record last week. And obviously, when we recorded this, Robin Williams was still with us. So we would be remiss. That's right, Brian. Remiss not to mention that on this episode. And in true Film Vault fashion, next week we will return with a top five Robin Williams performances. The man, obviously known as a comedian, but also quite a rangy actor. And we're going to get into quite a few of his different roles. And that'll be all next week on the Film Vault. For this week, though, here it comes, recorded at a time when Robin Williams was still with us. Now it's time for a little Film Vault.
Yeah, Film Vault. Yeah, Film Vault. Welcome, everybody, to Film Vault. Thank you for joining us. That's Anderson Cowan.
Yep.
Oh, I said your last name.
Yep. Oh.
No.
Cut it.
Start over again.
Cut that shit.
I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts for today. Taking questions from the listeners. No top five today. Questions from the listeners. Top five questions, if you will. Listener questions. I am on an island somewhere in Hawaii. Ugh. Somewhere in the South Pacific.
Why did you keep that a secret from the entire show, Brian?
What do you mean?
Question number one to my co-host over here.
What's your question?
I was at camp last week.
You were.
You're
out of touch.
As far as this episode is concerned, though, it was 2 weeks ago. God, that was a long time ago. I was at their camp.
No, it was. Oh, you got back.
2 weeks ago.
No. Oh, from this episode.
See how confusing? We're folding time and space because of your little...
spanning time.
Your little secrets over there. We had no idea. I already told you that it was going to be tough because I was at camp and I'm out of the real world. I can't watch movies when I'm up there at camp. I see nothing. Hear nothing.
Mm.
Come back, hear about the Ebola virus flying around the nation. I had no idea.
So
I was at camp. And then I get back.
This is the dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
You slip in real quick like, oh, by the way, we had two episodes this week.
While you were gone.
That's true.
We got the automated response from your email.
Ah, oh, you dick.
I know.
And you've known for months.
I knew about the trip, but I honestly wasn't looking far enough ahead in the calendar. Because, you know, it's a different month when we're looking at, and then you were gone, and it's like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. Got to plan this shit.
Well, we'll cover some of that with the listener questions, because I believe there's at least one or two that kind of ask about my opinion of you, and vice versa.
Oh.
But it's not going to be a totally lost episode.
Why would it be a lost episode?
Actually, it's going to be good.
When the listener questions come up, they often induce more talk about more movies that sometimes we don't talk about.
Yeah, not so much this list. But it
why do you default to no?
It's less ideal.
Why is no the first thing?
Because of the way we have to record it. It's all wobbly. Whatever. It's going to be good. It's going to be solid. We're going to have some good stuff. I just don't like doing an episode before we do the next. Whatever. It's going to be good.
Okay.
Got some good flick fashions here.
Yeah.
I hope I can remember how to do the show. It feels
three good movies,
three. Like it's been a month since I've done this thing called the Film Vault.
Get back on the treadmill, buddy.
I'm on it. I'm on this
how
horse.
How was camp?
It was good.
Yeah?
I saw a dead horse.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You saw a horse die or you saw a dead horse?
It was dead. Because I found... leave it to me to find out where they drag the large animals once they die out there at camp and take the children.
Upset. Oh, come on.
I swear to God.
Well, the good news is some were blind.
No blind kids came with me on the pilgrimage to see the dead cows and horses.
I guess that would have been extra cruel.
It's called the cow graveyard. It's a gulch. It's a gully out there in the middle of where we hike to. And
what do they do with them?
I'm like, what do you guys want to do? You want to climb up those rocks, which looks really adventurous and fun, or you want to learn about death? What do you want to do?
But they want to know about death.
They touch the horse.
Morbidly.
Yeah. Anyways, camp was great.
Good.
A lot more of the same, because I'm kind of, you know, pigeonholed up there. They always went with the 17, 18-year-olds, and I'm usually their last counselor that they have after sometimes, you know, 12 years at camp, and I see them off. Mm-hmm. I remind them at every meal, like, how many meals they have left ever as a camper.
Wow.
Listen, you enjoying your third to last lunch ever here, Johnny, as a camper? You enjoying that? You always got to throw in the camper thing. Give them hope of coming back as a counselor.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Chances,
that's right.
Chances are slim.
Time as a camper is up. I mean, no pun intended, but counselor? Maybe someday.
I had 10 kids, and like 9 of them cried, so.
How many of the counselors used to be campers? What percentage?
Oh, 1%, 2%.
Ooh,
very few.
More than that.
Very few. Oh. Yeah. A lot of people assume that I was, because it makes no sense otherwise why a person like me would be there. But I explained to them, nope. You just are misjudging me.
You're going to hang it up after this?
See,
it's been 20 years.
Yeah, you know what? I was thinking about it, but too many times while I was sitting there singing Kumbaya. I swear to God, singing Kumbaya.
Actually Kumbaya.
They actually sing Kumbaya, and I get so embarrassed.
I love it.
The first couple courses, and then I'm into it. I'm like, fuck it. I just let it go.
Are you waving your arms over your head?
Kumbaya.
Do you guys hold hands? You guys must hold hands with
No, arm over arm, and then we sway.
That's
I
nice.
Swear to God,
like
that's
that.
True.
Like a locked arm in arm?
And by now, Brian, the fire has like died down.
Oh, it's embers.
It's like, just kind of like a glowing. And it's just kumbaya. Someone's laughing, my lord. A kumbaya. All right.
Wow.
Let's do this flick fashion. Let's get into
let's do
this.
It.
Camp for Anderson.
We will give you a spirited round of flick fashions. We'll confess the flicks we've seen in the past week. Anderson, I saw three good movies. You want me to go first? Or do you want to alternate?
We're going to do the alternate thing, yeah.
Do you have three good movies to talk about?
Yeah, oh, well, yeah. Yes. I got a gem. I got a very depressing one. It's worth talking about. And then you and I are going to flick fest one together.
We are.
We're holding hands.
Let's do that first.
You want to start off with Temple?
I was assigned a film.
Yes.
I was assigned a film, an HBO movie from 2010 called Temple Grandin.
Yes.
Temple Grandin, I saw billboards for it all over town in 2010. And
I missed that.
I missed it.
You didn't see
Claire Danes' giant face with curly
hair you know
staring
what?
At you?
I have this uncanny ability to just tune things out. I was actually living in that area
at
that time,
speaking of tuning things out, Logan wants to say something.
I just wanted to interrupt really quick to ask, don't you want to do this next week or on tomorrow's episode?
You must
to pay off your gambling
out.
From 2 weeks ago?
You must not have heard last week's
I guess we should let you.
You must not have heard last week's episode.
You're not here last week's episode.
Come on, Logan. Listen to the show.
We decided this is the way it's got to be just to make sense. That way I could talk about more important or more timely films next week. God damn it. See what you've done, Hawaii boy?
As we mentioned last week, Logan, Anderson messaged me and said, hey, can we push back Temple to next week and both talk about it? And
yes.
I said, sounds good.
So I could talk about three movies
said,
that
Anderson,
just came out
please
last
tell
week.
Logan. Whatever you do, please tell Logan.
I don't recall you saying that.
I don't remember saying
that
either, actually. Mm-hmm. And you said, who's Logan? Temple Grandin, 2010, directed by Mick Jackson. Mick Jackson is the director. It's a bit of trivia, actually. Director of L.A. Story. I always assumed Steve Barton was the director of L.A. Story, but no, it is Mick Jackson, also the director of this. Starring, of course, Claire Danes, Julia Ormond. Hmm?
So what I was saying, yes, this looks so god-awful that I have this uncanny ability to just tune things out from my
really
peripheral.
I really do.
I really can.
You tune me out often.
My name's Temple Grandin. I'm not like other people. I think of pictures. I connect them.
When did you... Okay, also in this film...
Her voice... It's been like a month since I've seen this thing. Her voice is still deep in my head.
Burrowed. Catherine O'Hara, David Strathairn. When did you first see Temple Grandin? When did you stumble across?
A month ago.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What was the impetus?
The wife...
oh, that's right. You said
was watching it for a school project because she's getting her master's over there at the old USC, also known as USC. Mm-hmm. And I was aware of Temple Grandin, the woman, the person. She's a real-life person. She has severe, I'd say severe autism.
She's a high-functioning autistic.
High on the spectrum, though.
She can live by herself, but she got problems.
She's not one of those people where you might have a quick exchange with her and wonder if she has autism. It's pretty apparent right off the bat.
What kind of autism she has? That's what you might wonder.
Well,
you don't wonder if she has autism. You're like, I wonder what kind of autism
exactly.
She has.
Especially if you're a roommate of hers watching her in the squeeze machine.
The squeeze box.
So I first became aware of her, I believe it was This American Life, the television version, which fan-fucking-tastic. If you have a chance to see any of them, I believe there's 10 episodes total, really high production value. Ira Glass is involved.
Of course.
But that being said, still very, very good. No, actually, he's good on the TV shows. He's easier to digest if you can see his face as well.
Gotcha.
He's rare that way. A lot of people other way around. This guy, I'm
kind of like that.
You are tough.
Mm. No.
Tough
what?
To visually
stop
accept.
It. Stop it. Accept with your eyes. Your
but yes, they had a great piece on her on both the radio version as well as the television version. And she is
She's a real person. She's still alive today.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a. She is noted for her work in advancing animal. What do you
processing.
Call it? Treating animals more humanely.
On the plants.
Cattle, livestock, horses, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And this sort of is a, as I would describe it, a good biopic with a tremendous performance by Claire Danes.
This entire movie is about Claire Danes. It's about the subject matter as well, because Temple Grandin is such a unique character. But it's all about Claire Danes pulling it off, because this is tough.
This movie gets a little melodramatic and it sort of gets a little
it's
out there.
It's a TV director.
It's a TV movie. But every time it gets a little out there with the melodrama and a little heavy and a little sappy and whatever, she fucking reins it in, man. She is great. It gets said a lot, and actually one of my least favorite cliches about movie, and it's like, I forgot I was watching Brad Pitt or whoever it was. I forgot I was watching them. You don't forget you're watching a movie star. I forgot several times I'm watching Claire Danes. Like, holy shit, this is Claire fucking Danes.
And you do forget, and that's the sign of a very good performance, which, you know, they're fairly rare.
Had this been a theatrical release, guarantee Oscar nomination for Best Actress.
Mm-hmm. It's along the same lines as Michael Douglas playing Liberace. Behind the Candelabra.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Same along the same lines.
Yeah.
Same quality performance. You forget, and they do such a good job.
That's
plus, she's doing, you know, she's doing the mentally challenged. She is mentally challenged,
right.
Even though she excels in some areas. She's mentally challenged
also
in social areas.
Also mental disability.
And, you know, going back to the Tropic Thunder thing, you got to be careful with,
right.
with that. But I would have never guessed Claire Danes.
What Tropic Thunder thing?
You don't ever want to go full tard?
Oh, full retard?
Right.
That's what they say.
Oh, well, it's Tropic Thunder.
That's right.
We're quoting.
She won the Golden Globe that year for Best Actress in a TV movie.
Anyways, I'm glad you saw it. I'm glad you liked it. Temple Grandin.
Temple Grandin.
I see in pictures.
We really should do top five mentally handicapped or mentally disabled or whatever you want to call it. Because actually, I'm surprised.
Yeah, you know, we should do that.
I'm surprised we haven't done that category. It's a very ripe category for top five.
I'm not like other people. Oh, it was good. It was really good.
I'm Temple Grandin.
Yeah. But, you know, it's all about the performance. And it's all, you know, she's a remarkable character. She really does care about the little animals there.
It's a really, really spectacular performance. And like Anderson said last week, I think, or 2 weeks ago, you can stream this for free on HBO Go if you are, in fact, a subscriber. If you can get yourself a hold of a subscription. Was
the language English?
Hold of a subscription.
All right, here we go.
I'm Temple Grandin.
Next movie. Next movie you got there.
Next movie.
Yeah.
I believe you talked about this movie semi-recently. Came out earlier this year. Mm-hmm. Just now hitting DVD. Blue Ruin.
Mm.
Blue Ruin.
Why did you watch this?
Why wouldn't I watch it?
Because it's a great quality piece of filmmaking.
So I shouldn't watch it?
I just can't picture you tracking this down.
Oh, stop it.
Is it streaming somewhere?
No, I sent away for it.
Did you?
It's supposed to be really good. You said it was good. It's
okay,
got 97% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Let's hear the Bishy take here.
Not for me. You know, not enough transforming robots.
So far, Blue Ruin's one of my favorite movies of the year.
Blue Ruin is written and directed by Jeremy Saulnier. Mm-hmm. It is his debut. Mm-hmm. It is written and directed by him. It is starring Macon Blair and a whole bunch of people you've never heard of. This is very independent, very gritty, feels independent feel to it, yet it feels accomplished.
It looks
polished,
great. It looks great. It looks very good. It doesn't feel like raw and like this.
It doesn't feel amateurish at all. It feels accomplished. It feels,
which, you know what? 5-10 years ago, it probably would have because of budget restraints. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, with the advance of video and cameras and lenses that you can use on a shoestring budget, you can make them look really good, which is nice. It's nice because, you know, if he's shooting this on like super grainy, like super 16mm or something, it's going to look creepier, you know, and that's not really what he was going for.
But it was a dank, dark movie.
A
for
dark
sure.
movie, but you didn't need it to be like creepy. You
it didn't
know,
need to be like rough around the edges.
The whole point, I think, with this one is it's an everyman, like I said, and it's a vengeance pick.
It is a
but
revenge.
it's a very relatable. Can you call him an anti-hero? Yeah.
Yes, you absolutely can.
He's relatable, and it's very different from Drive.
He's
in
a
the sense
flawed of, hero.
He's a flawed hero for sure, but he's somebody that we could, because like if you or I were to go on a vengeance, bloodthirsty kill spree,
right.
It would probably go down something like this. Not all smooth and cool like we're used to seeing in vengeance picks.
Now, I am actually more than – this is a very worthy contender, by the way, for top five revenge movies. Had I seen this before we did, or had we done the list now or later, I would have considered doing a top five revenge movies. This would have been an entry. Now, I'm actually much more than normal hesitant to reveal anything even about the plot, even about the premise. It's a revenge movie, and you alluded to a little bit. But one of the ways this movie was –
unfolded.
Brilliant was the way it unfolded. Mm. It unfolds in such a artful way. Like, it reveals, it's as though you have a winning poker hand, but you're revealing the cards one at a time. You know what I mean? You're like, you're peeling them off your hands and revealing them slowly. It's artfully done.
The first 5-8 minutes is barely any dialogue.
I think I wrote that down. No dialogue the first 5 minutes. No,
and you're just watching this guy live in his car. Like, who is this guy? Why do I care about this guy? But it's shot in such a way that you're compelled to learn more.
The relationships, the motives, everything is deliberately revealed. It's very patient exposition. And the best is, it's such a basic plot point, but his sister's in the movie, and the guy goes to visit his sister early in the movie, but they don't reveal that it's his sister until later in the movie.
Or until this part of the film vault with Brian.
But it's not a reveal. It's not a reveal. It's just exposition that comes 20 minutes into the movie when it should have, in a crappier movie, it would have come in minute two.
You're my sister, so I'm here for you.
Exactly.
I see you in pictures, and I saw you in my head.
That's exactly what a crappy movie would have done. This movie's great, and it waits until minute 25, minute 30 to sort of like, oh.
And honestly, I'm all over Brian's ass about giving things away, but he did it in this way, not as a big reveal, like, oh my God,
No, absolutely not. There was none of that. That's what it is.
It was just naturally came about.
But like when he encounters her, it's like, oh, this could be his ex-wife. This could be a girlfriend. It could be a sister. There's just a strain to their relationship, and they kind of reveal later what's going on. And it's just really, really well done, artfully done. And another thing I liked, it was very sort of Coen Brothers-esque, was the way the movie throws up a lot of roadblocks for its character. Like, nothing's easy. Like, at one point, he needs a gun.
Mm.
And he sees a gun in the back of a car.
Mm-hmm.
He wants the gun. Mm-hmm. The plot necessitates that he gets the gun. Mm-hmm. But he breaks open the car and gets the gun, but the gun has a lock on it. And he tries to get the lock off, and he breaks the gun.
All right, let people enjoy.
But I'm indicating this is such an ironed over part of the plot. It's almost a throwaway thing. And any other movie would have just fast forwarded the part where he got the gun and he had the gun and used the gun.
This movie puts up
roadblocks that are almost totally unnecessary. There's a great part in
but
the
realistic.
Diner. Yeah, this is what happens in life. It's like, no, it doesn't go that smoothly. Don't just get the gun. It's a process. And sometimes it sucks. Sometimes you have to go back to square one.
Mm-hmm.
More massive skull trauma.
Okay.
Deus Ex Machina.
One of the greatest kill scenes I've ever seen in a movie, which I also mentioned when I flicked Festus a few weeks ago. One of the greatest. I rewound it numerous times because it was so ultra realistic and so quick. But it's probably very.
What are you
doing over here?
I remember what you're
which doing. One. Come on, just go with me.
Okay,
I'm not going to tell you which one. Just let it go, Brian.
There's a man.
There's some really funny, subtle humor here.
Yeah,
too.
There is.
Real light.
I mean,
very subtle.
This is a very
the guy
early
in the trunk.
Coen Brothers
the guy in the
movie.
Trunk. I'll get you a gun.
Yeah. Fish okay. in a barrel.
All right. So,
by the way, future top five, write this down, Logan. Top five injuries.
Don't talk to him like he's some kind of servant.
He is the producer of the show who maintains lists.
It's true.
Top five injuries. That's a good one for later.
Okay.
All right.
What's the name of the guy that directed that?
That is Jeremy Saulnier.
Yeah. You know what would be nice?
That is his debut.
If one of us had seen, because it's been 7 years since he's made a film.
Did he make
years.
A movie?
That'd be wrong for you to write that down. It'd be wrong information. Misinformation is what we call that, Brian.
Because
he made a little movie called Murder Party. Murder Party 2007!
Is this a
fuck fest in this bitch right now?
Wow, what are the chances?
Look at what are the chances? I'm doing it all out of order now. Doing it all out of order. I can't believe Murder Party, made by Mr. Jeremy Saulnier.
Is it like a real movie?
Saulnier. Has escaped the guise of this guy. For as long as this, Brian, this is unacceptable. This is a movie
for the listener. Anderson is pointing at himself.
Movie made for me. Mm-hmm. Murder Party, Brian. All right, the only thing completely unrecognizable, much like J.C. Chandor, he made Margin Call, and then he made an unrecognizable All Is Lost. You can't tell that it's the same filmmaker. Both brilliant in their own ways. Murder Party is so different.
J.C. may come up later.
He may. I'm very excited about his next film. Anyways. Getting ahead of myself. Murder Party, very, very different in tone and in texture, everything from Blue Ruin.
Okay.
Blue Ruin, ultra neo-realistic. Other than Macon, the lead character in Blue Ruin, who also has a smaller part in Murder Party, there's nothing recognizable. There's nothing that tells you it's the same director. Blue Ruin was Murder Party is a very quirky and bloody Halloween-themed goofy movie with really, really spot-on hilarious comedy throughout.
Okay.
Okay. The premise is it's this guy. He lives home alone with his cat. And it's Halloween with some beautiful shots that let you know that right off the bat. And he's walking down the street, and he comes across an invitation is blowing in the wind, and he stops it with his foot as he's walking home with groceries or something, and he opens it up, and it says, Murder Party, you're invited. And
nice.
There's not even like an address or anything. It's absurd, right? But he's like, all right. He goes home, and his cat's not cooperating. His cat won't get off his lazy boy chair, so he says, fuck it, I'm going to go to the party.
Stupid cat.
That's how he decides, because his cat won't get off the chair.
Nice.
So he puts on this absurd, ridiculous Sir Lancelot made out of cardboard costume.
Maybe something like a knight outfit?
Yeah, like a knight. And he and with little like Viking horns. And he goes off to this party, and it's obviously this director that he also wrote this one, Jeremy. He went to school with these types of people. They're the art scene fucks that are a brooding, and they're trying to be, they're all totally narcissistic. They're all in this, he gets to the party, and that's what the party's made up of, and I'll leave it there. There's like six main characters. One of them is dressed up like one of the Furies from Warriors, the baseball Furies. Nice. Remember that?
Yeah, of course.
One is dressed like Pris from Do Electric Sheep Dream.
Oh, from Blade Runner.
Blade Runner. She's dressed like Pris.
Sorry, I was thinking of her as Daryl Hannah.
They never mention that it's Blade Runner, but it obviously is. And I'll just leave it there. Now, by the end, there was like an extended foot chase scene that kind of, and there's some other climactic elements that left me a little empty. But all in all, I really, really enjoyed this movie. And I highly recommend it. If we were to do a top five Halloween-themed movies, Murder Party's on that list.
Really?
Yes.
Where'd I get a hold of this?
I can't. You got to send away, but it's worth it. And you know what?
I'll send away for Lou Ruin.
5.9, paltry 5.9 on IMDb. Mistaken. Now, I also
was this theatrically released?
Yeah, very short period. I saw this after Blue Ruin, so I might be giving it more breaks than not because I really like his work.
You've established a relationship.
His next film, which was mentioned a couple weeks ago by our new Ms. Movies, is Green Room, which is about a punk rock band that plays at a remote location, and then they get stuck out there. They get trapped, marooned, if you will, Brian. Nazi skinheads are chasing them down, hunting them down, and they have to escape. That's going to be a great movie. That's what he's shooting right now. I'm very excited about this kid's future.
Why another movie with a color in the title, by the way, Blue Ruin and Green Room?
Yeah.
Why is Blue Ruin, called Blue Ruin?
I don't know. You can. It's like a song, man. Make up, whatever it means to you.
I don't know,
man.
If I missed something in the plot.
I think it's just about how he has the blues because he's completely he's a very depressed individual. We're talking about Blue Ruin again.
His life is bent
causes
on this
him
revenge.
Situational depression is what it's called, and he's very blue, and he's ruined by it, and he's ruining all sorts of things in his wake as a result.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it Green Room? Is that what? Yeah, Green Room is next for Jeremy Saulnier, and who, by the way, is all over.
I said debut, by the way. That was not correct.
All over the IMDb message boards, assuming it's him defending his movie because a lot of people were very tough on Murder Party.
Really?
I think a lot of people also. If you're a big horror fan, which I am not, and you rent this one thinking it's just gonna be strictly horror, there's some gory elements, but they're all funny. It's a funny movie. It's a very clever, funny movie.
We're going to get into that area now where this generation of people who are coming up and becoming filmmakers and artists and musicians and whatever are going to be people who are like on message boards and IMDb and Reddit and things like that because they just grew up with that. You know what I mean? That the older generation, that's just not something they're into, but the younger generation, it's going to be funny to see people taking to Reddit.com to defend their movie or album or whatever.
Yeah, he's all over the message boards. I was reading a little
bit.
I was confused by the 5.9, and I saw some of the titles of the threads on the message boards on IMDb were like, worst movie, this movie's a turd.
Oh.
It's like, really? What's he do? And then he's on there defending
it. Nice. I love it. It's like when you're on Yelp and it's like, I had a horrible experience. And like the Yelp person's like, I'm so sorry. Please come back and enjoy a dessert on us.
Which is
weird because it's a massage parlor.
I saw it as kind of reaching and I didn't like it. It looked a little desperate. I thought he was better than that. It was all before Blue Ruin, before he made Blue Ruin.
Blue Ruin's a good movie.
Took six years, though, to, I'm sure that he's doing other things. These guys must be like, directing commercials and whatnot. But Murder Party, I think, for the majority of our audience who really likes that funny, subtle, crisp humor, it's worth sending away for.
Okay.
Murder Party. Add it to the list, bro.
Tell you what I just sent away for. So remember I was doing that thing for a while where I was tracking down movies that had escaped me in recent history or whatever. They were very, very good.
Are you stopping time while you do this? How do you have time to watch all these movies?
I've been doing this over the course of the last few months.
Thousands of movies.
Oh, how dare you.
Thousands.
How dare you. Well, I'm shipping away. Now it's hundreds.
Yeah. I like your attitude tonight, dude. It's going to be hard to say some of the things I'm going to say in the listener questions.
What are you going to say? You have a package for me, by the way.
Oh, yeah, the package. More on the package later. We might cut the entire package if it doesn't deliver. But a listener sent. All right, real quick.
Must I suffer?
I've been getting a lot of packages and emails about the old Baldwin over here. And, they all sign off with the Baldwin must pay. Must suffer. The Baldwin must suffer. Just a little teaser later in the episode. Got a package delivered.
Sure looks like it's been opened.
To my address.
Sure does look like
I
it's
did
been
break
opened.
A federal law. I opened it right up.
Sure, it's addressed
it
to me.
It says, Brian Bald Bishop, care of Loveline. I don't know what that is. Attention, A. Cowan. I believe that's my name.
You're a Cowan?
And then the contents are best served cold.
Oh, like revenge.
Yeah, so they're trying to even the score here.
But you know what it is. I guarantee
I don't know what it is,
Brian. Fucked with. That is open.
I don't know
that
what it is. I opened
open.
The package.
Oh.
And there's a wrapped DVD that says read first.
Oh, no. If that's rice, then we'll be upset.
And there's a very long little.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Well, hands up. He's.
Hands are we
over.
Doing this right now, right in the middle of Flick Fashion?
Why not?
I'm horrified because I am 95% sure I know what's in this here.
Why,
DVD.
Why are you so sure?
Because there's if you paid attention, there's a movie out there that I'm horrified of. Like, absolutely. Like, I'm getting a little bit nauseous right now. And I am such a big person, Brian, that I actually brought this. I didn't tamper.
You didn't?
I mean, I could have easily just
wrapped,
chucked this.
If you did, you wrapped it up nice and.
I asked my friend Mike Carano what I should do, and he told me to just put, like, Harold and Maude in there. Just open the wrapping and then replace it with Harold and Maude.
Read first. Do I have to read this?
Yes.
Oh, it's a poem.
Yeah, he's on meth, I think, this person.
Your suffering most want, yet do not despair. Ignorance merits only a fleeting glance. But Anderson's bluster knows no repair. So I send a gift for the direst of circumstance. Not to be opened until the need is clear. When your angry associate cannot be moved, the contents will inspire hatred and fear, but the obligation will leave him effectively cooed. Never to be assigned, underscore, by the way, underline. Never to be assigned, you must rise above the petty. Though resisting delicious opportunity will be hard. Rejoice, you possess protection, an angel at the ready, a one-time get-out-of-jail-free card. The balance is now shifted. Keep up the good fight. And when the time comes, release Cowan's kryptonite.
Yeah,
wow.
I'm pretty sure I know what this is.
If you want to write a poem, it will be read on the phone vault.
Is that how that works? Really?
What? This is going to come. If fucking Anthrax gets a lot of me.
Do you have any idea what this movie
I really don't. I mean, it's going to come to me.
There's
gonna,
one movie out there that I just dread the idea of you even having knowledge of. I don't know why I'm allowing this to happen right now.
Oh, my God. It's unmarked. It's unmarked.
No, 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 no. Open it. Open it. Continue the opening. There's still a clamshell there you got to open.
That's what I'm saying. It's an unmarked DVD clamshell.
Yeah, but
and by the way, no peeking. He taped it shut.
Yeah, okay, he's a crazy person. Peek.
Oh, I gotta cut it open. It's taped shut.
I mean,
shut.
Either way, you can have this, you know, cocked and ready and it aimed at my head if you need it. But I don't think it's fair that we don't know, like, you know, what happens when you pull the trigger. Because I would like to avoid this. And also, what's creepy is the, once again, unmarked package.
Unmarked package. Is there any return?
No return. Anything? No return.
No name? No.
And it looks like he wrote the address and our names with his left hand, and he's a right-handed person.
Could it be Rune?
No.
Could it be Tyler?
Okay. Why don't I work on that while you flick fast your next?
Why don't you get ready for a world?
And if it's just a blank disk, it's going straight in the trash. Because it could be a virus. I guess it could be, even if it has words on it.
I don't know. This doesn't even seem familiar to me.
What's it say? What's it say? Does it start with an E?
What is it? I don't remember this.
Dude, I'm never, ever, ever watching that. I will quit the show.
Special extended DVD edition.
No, I'm getting gross, like goosebumps
of
right
Earthlings.
Now. Yeah, I'm not going to ever
narrated
watch it.
Narrated by Joaquin Phoenix, written and directed by Sean Monson.
Are you
music by Moby.
Yeah.
What is this? Will you talk about the film vault?
It's animal torture.
Have you talk about this on the film?
Yes,
vault?
I've talked
about when? It. When? I tune out when you talk, but
the content's on. Just you keep it at your house. I don't even want it. It's.
Should I watch this?
I don't think you can if you have any kind of heart.
What is it?
It's like all like behind the scenes, like hidden camera of like animal torture and cow plantations where Temple Garland Grandin hasn't done her work yet. And,
oh no!
And like
research hasn't gotten
there. Research on monkeys and stuff, all that shit.
Oh.
Ugh. It's supposed to, like, open eyes to, like, dumb fucks who don't realize that animals are treated poorly.
Okay. But you realize that?
Yes. And I've read enough about it and heard enough about it that I will never, ever, I don't want to peek.
It's narrated by Joaquin Phoenix.
I'm well aware. He's half brain dead. He's got problems. Paul Thomas Anderson refers to him as his little talking monkey. He does. Heard him in an interview. He's like, I like working with Joaquin. He's like my little pet monkey that talks.
Should we finish up our flick fashions?
God damn it.
That was a real detour.
Who is this bastard?
Who is this delightful human being?
You're a sick fuck. And it's not even a burned copy. It's the actual DVD.
Where is this? Does it even say where it's from?
Nothing. There's no information.
Date of sale. They sent it recently.
Apparently it makes the Cove seem like a walk in the park. That Earthlings. We'll never watch.
It doesn't even say.
Okay, let go.
Oh, this is local. This is sent from 90066.
Well, that guy's a fuck.
This is my old neighborhood.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is like just.
Is this you?
This is just, no, I'm in 90066. I'm in 90066.
Has the tumor made a rogue, Brian, that doesn't.
What if there was a like a Tyler Durden version of me?
Would he be cool, though?
Hanging around. Yeah, he'd be totally cool.
I've never seen him.
How dare you?
He never showed up here. All right, let's go.
Yeah,
come on.
This is my old neighborhood. This is just down the road. Mm-hmm. Okay, last film. Like I said, I've been tracking down good movies that I missed for whatever reason. Movies with people, and I mentioned it. People are like, "Dude, you never seen that?" And this is one that IMDb thought that I, or excuse me, Netflix thought that I would like a 4.2, 4.3. So they anticipated
that's
a good
high.
Things.
That's high.
That is good things. That is high.
Out of five,
and I did like it.
Mm-hmm.
Miller's Crossing.
Ah.
I'd never seen Miller's Crossing.
No, you haven't.
No, 1990. Mm-hmm. Miller's Crossing, written and directed by the Coen brothers. Accredited Joel Coen, Ethan Coen, but they are collectively known as the Coen brothers.
Union issues.
Gabrielle Byrne is the star. Marsha Gay Harden, Albert Finney, John Turturro, John Polito, who was hilarious. Remember this movie?
Not well. Not well at all.
Okay, so it's in the now that we have a good amount of. This was their third film after Raising Arizona and their debut, Bloody Simple Plan. Blood Simple. This is their third film, and from. Okay, I know this is heresy. I thought it was funnier than Raising Arizona. That slapsticky comedy isn't really my thing. This was hilarious. The interaction between the gangster and his son, his fat son, he's like, "He's a genius!" And he holds out the two hands. "Which one you want? The quarter's in one of them. Which one you want?" And he points the left hand. "Ah, pick another hand." Picks the left hand again. "Just take the quarter." He hands it in his right hand. His fucking fat son's so dumb, yet he can't. He's like, "He's a genius!"
They know dumb really well. They do dumb so well. Yeah, this is a movie I need to revisit. It's been, I've only seen it once, and I saw it when I was going through, just, you know, slamming through their catalog because I realized that I love them.
Now that we have, like I said, now that we have the Coen brothers, a lot of movies under our belt, and we can sort of look at their career and objective in the totality of it, this goes, it's in the top half, but it's not one of the best. There's a clear delineation between the Fargos and the No Country for Old Men's and this movie.
I remember it being too short on laughs for my particular taste.
Gabrielle Byrne gets sucker punched no less than a half dozen times.
Like, I don't enjoy
scenes
that.
Open
I'm
with
not
him.
A big Gabrielle.
Scenes open with him just taking one on the chin, and it's just kind of a recurring joke, which I thought was
sounds
funny.
Sounds kind of slapsticky.
But they played it tongue-in-cheek. They didn't there's Raising Arizona way to play it, and then there's Miller's Crossing way to play it, I guess. It's like subtle differences in humor. Right away, you got the idea. They probably wrote this movie because they enjoyed writing the old-timey dialogue.
Right.
A lot of the old-timey dialogue. It's an old gangster film from, it was like the late 20s, I think is when it was set.
It was like Prohibition, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was just after Prohibition. It was the drinking booze. If you do watch it again, notice that the score doesn't seem to match the movie. Like, they were kind of in over their heads with the score. It almost felt like an epic or like a lush Western or something. It didn't quite match what was going on the screen. Yeah, like I said, top half of Coen Brothers movies. Very good, but not quite their best. But, I mean, good movie. I can see why people like it. I liked it.
Perhaps one day you will assign it to me so I could see it again.
Maybe I will.
Rather than the Earthlings. Earthlings.
It doesn't even interest me. I mean, thank you, listener, for sending it, but good to know it's a derringer in my boot.
What doesn't interest you? What do you mean?
The film. Or even having you see it.
Really? Good.
No, I'll do it as a punitive measure, but I will take no glee.
Final movie.
I will take no joy.
This is supposed to be the first movie that
It'll
I flick
be no mirth.
First movie that I flick fest, but because of unforeseen circumstances here, we go with the last one. While I was away at camp, some 2 weeks ago now, Brian, look at it there. Two and a half weeks ago.
Oh, so long.
The wife watched a HBO documentary, which she has been doing quite a bit of with that old HBO Go.
They make good movies.
Thanks, Logan.
Did Logan buy it for you?
Boy Interrupted is the name of the movie.
I've not seen Boy Interrupted.
Boy Interrupted. You seen it floating around out there?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. I see it pop up on the old
2009.
On the old guide.
Wife watched it while I was at camp, and she recommended it, which is usually a good sign, Brian. It's about a boy named Evan Perry. He was 15 years old, Brian, when he committed suicide back in 2005. Now, you learn about his suicide very early, and that's the entire movie. It's all about him killing himself.
Okay.
His parents are a couple of filmmakers, and they have a troubled kid, who is Evan. They live in New York. The kid is obsessed with death. From the time he's five, he's plotting his own
demise.
Wow.
It's heavy shit.
Harold and Maudish.
They have countless hours of home footage that parents do that chronicle his life, and they string it together to make a very jarring, depressing, yet yes, it's an interesting movie. He started talking about suicide at age 5. Like I said, he was a real-life Harold and Maude, like you just said. And his bipolar that they cataloged it, and it was palpable. You haven't really seen, like, when he was in one of his down states. Because I have a touch of bipolar.
What?
Touch.
You go to highs and lows? Buddy, why don't you tell me about that?
A bit.
Why don't you talk about that?
But when this Evan kid, like, it was almost like possession. Like, his face just, like, there's just no one there. Mm. Like, he would just check out. And a super smart, like, they say that he went from 5 to a teenager. He never really had his, like, boyhood years. Mm. Put me in a similar headspace as Dear Zachary did. And it still remains with me. I mean, as we record this, it's been...
Dear Zachary is a devastating documentary. I don't know if I want to see this now.
It's been about a week since I've seen it, and it's still bothering me. I think it's put me in a bit of a... It's hard to say because I get these post-camp blues, which sounds a little bit foolish, but after coming back from camp and waking up the first morning in an empty, I got the dogs, but I wake up and, you know, normally you get used to, like, waking up with kids.
Absolutely.
You have something to do right away, and I wake up with dogs.
There's a void.
So, yeah.
Whatever it is,
I watched this literally the night that I got back from camp. Because
I found out
my buddy was going away, and we had to cram into episodes. So I'm like, hey, the wife watched a movie. Pop it in. But yeah, as for execution, it was directed by his bereaved mom, and his dad did the cinematography. So I'm not going to talk about how distractingly bad most of the cinematography was. I won't discuss that. I'm not sure what they're shooting for, but yeah, if you're a masochist and you like to mutilate your brain there and really kind of put yourself in a dark headspace, Boy Interrupted. It's available on HBO Go. It is. Very interesting, and I think that I was a little more fragile and raw coming back from camp, spending time with kids that were, you know, close to his age.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised.
And facing their own mortality.
And I'm sure there are some punk rock, you know, bands and whatnot, or just really dark, gothic type fucks that put, like, Evan Perry as, like, their hero and their savior. Because, I mean, listening to him sing, like, Kurt Cobain-like lyrics that were his own at age 10, I mean, that was really interesting. And, will stick with me probably forever.
Wow.
But, yeah, it's tragic. It's a very sad story. Very, very... The human mind is just so strange. It's so weird.
It is, right?
But you know what? It's genetic, too, because his uncle killed himself when he was 22, and you learn that they had a ton of similar traits.
Mm.
Very interesting. And sad. So, takeaway, Murder Party. Check it out. And Temple Grandin.
Temple Grandin's a solid movie, as is Blue Ruin, and of course Miller's Crossing. If you haven't seen that, worthy of tracking down.
You know what's not good is Earthlings. Unless it is teaching some people that
you don't know Earthlings is bad.
But well, I never will. I am terrified of that movie.
Might.
Not since Cannibal Holocaust have I been so nervous of watching a movie.
This is like in The Dark Knight Rises when Bane, like the scary guy, gets his little mask detached and all of a sudden he's like a cowering weakling.
Uh-huh.
That's like what's happening with you.
That's what's happening.
Yeah, you're the scary guy, but all of a sudden now you're cowering.
I'm always cowering. I'm always a little bit scared, Brad.
Coming up next, listener questions. Questions from you guys. Vacation time, Anderson. Time for me.
Not for me.
It would be vacation time for the listeners.
Oh.
Vacation from Amazon read.
Just a quick reminder, though, that Amazon is what drives this freaking show, even though there are other sponsorships on the program here and there. But it is Amazon. We are taking a week off from having Brian read that list.
And please keep buying your crazy textbooks. It brings me a lot of joy when I have to read, like, anatomy textbooks or law or some bullshit.
I thought we were giving them a vacation.
Sorry. Undies.
Undies.
All I've ever wanted is to be able to say the word undies on a podcast and get paid for it.
Now, undies, me undies.
You undies.
Yes. No,
no
me.
Me.
Me undies.
Me undies.
Evidently, there was recently a survey that showed that men keep their underwear for 7 years, which is far too long.
7 years?
Far too long.
What do they do with this? Float away into space when they're done?
I think I might have some that I've had for 8, 9 years, maybe. Yeah, it's sentimental.
I sit next to you.
It's like I remember, like, oh, yeah, I remember being with her. When, you think of things like that. But here, you and I have tried this company. We have worn them. They have cupped us. They have.
Emerson.
Yes.
I'm wearing mine right now.
Are you really?
I am wearing MeUndies at this moment. They are very good quality underwear, and if you're in the market for new undies, let's help you out. MeUndies.com, MeUndies.com/TFV before September 1st to get 20% off your first order. 20% off your first order when you go to MeUndies.com/TFV before September 1st. They guarantee you're going to be happy with them. Trust me, once you feel MeUndies on your body, you're never going back.
Not oval space, Brian.
What is it?
Square space.
I thought you were on rectangle space, but okay, I can see the square space.
Hey, if Logan can do it, anyone can do it. Logan, our fine producer over here, he made a fantastic little website there. It took, 5 hours?
Are we calling him
producer? Not even that. It took like an hour or two.
Wow.
And it was pretty easily. You just drag and drop things into place and put where you want it to point to.
But you had to call friends constantly, be like, what do I do next, right? Like, you're texting people.
I am the friend people call to ask that question.
He relies on the Asian half of him.
Okay, that makes sense.
Squarespace is also the easiest way to create an exceptional website.
That's pretty
good. Has already been exemplified by our buddy Logan over there, producer Indeed. Of the program. They have beautiful designs for you to start with and all the options you need to create a unique website for you or your business. I mean, I've been saying it for a long time on the show. No one's going to take you seriously unless you have your actual own website. You can't have a Facebook. That's not enough.
Nope.
If you want to be taken seriously and you got something to peddle, you got to have your own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Try Squarespace today for free. Trust me. You'll love your new website, and when you're ready to go live, enter TFV at checkout. Save 10%, plus you get free hosting. Use promo code TFV at squarespace.com/filmvault. That's squarespace.com/filmvault. Anderson, football season is just around the corner.
Football.
You can get your piece of $5 million during kickoff week at DraftKings.com, America's and my favorite one-week fantasy football site. And they are, in fact, giving away $5 million during kickoff week, $5 million in prizes. It's 1 week only, so you're not drafting team for the whole goddamn year. You're not going to be crippled by injury. Mm-hmm. And you play again the contest, and you win money. DraftKings.com, use promo code TFV, and you'll get free entry into the week one $5 million kickoff bash. Holy smokes. Enter TFV for free entry now at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com.
Loveline is no longer limited to the coast-to-coast radio model.
That's true, Dr. Drew. We are now global and on demand.
Go to podcastone.com where you can download full shows right to your computer or phone and take us with you on your commute or even to work or to the gym, grocery shop, wherever you're going. Take it, download it.
The same old Loveline show that airs nightly on the radio near you. They're all now available whenever and wherever you want.
The free Loveline podcast only from Podcast One at Podcast One, podcastone.com.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, it's D.W. Griffith, and you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBrian.com.
Yeah, welcome back. Thanks, Inspector Owl. Hey, Inspector Owl, they're our featured artist of the week. They're of Geneva, Illinois. InspectorOwl.com for more info, or AndersonandBrian.com.
Hey, Brian, before the show started, we had a little bit of a back and forth disagreement about you raising money for people with that. The old brain tumors there.
That's right. We're doing a walk, and I had an outside-the-box idea to raise money, and you poo-pooed it.
Yeah, I said Logan backed me up on that as well, so I'm not
Who's
alone
Logan?
Over here.
Right,
but can you? I know that we're speaking in the future here. Mm. A little confusing due to your impromptu trip to Hawaii.
That's right.
Oh, wait, it's not impromptu.
Not at all.
Can you send people or give people a heads up about something in the works or something, some kind of auction that you may be doing?
We're not going to do the auction.
We're not going to do the specific auction that you came up with. We're gonna tweak it. But what I'm saying is, can you send anyone over to like Bald Brian and his tumor walk.com or anything?
Go to brianbishop.com and find information on how to donate to the this year's LA Brain Tumor Walk. It is fully tax deductible if you're feeling charitable.
It's also tax deductible.
Tax deductible if you're feeling charitable. If you want to throw down a few bucks. If you want to walk with me, that'd be fantastic. I've had listeners walk with me in the past, and that's always a fun time. Take a couple laps around the LA Coliseum, talk movies, it's a good time.
Do they walk a lot?
a lot faster, like, to get out in front of you.
Yeah, it's like, slow down, man. It's like, oh, like, I'll catch up.
I didn't get to finish talking to you about that, about this one idea.
I'll catch up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I'll put a link on our website if you don't mind.
Sure, on this episode.
Should I tell the idea that you had? Because I'm feeling a little guilty over here, but I think that I had
to. Sure.
So Brian wanted to auction off being a guest. With,
yeah, I want to raise money for this Brain Tumor Walk. It's important to me, and it's an important cause. And I said, hey, how about this? We auction off a chance to be a guest on the Film Vault. You can come on. You can do a top five.
You didn't get that far. I said no.
I said no immediately.
Yeah.
But I'm used to that, so I treated it as a speed bump.
I was saying no three more times before you were that far.
And I said, hey, we'll have someone, if they're out of town, we'll Skype them in. We'll just we'll do a little Film Vault guest, and you can bid to be a big guest on our show. And all the money goes to
be a big guest?
80% of the money goes to go to the charity.
Where'd the other 20% go?
I skim.
Is there some foul?
You skim.
I do feel like a bit of an asshole. But in the long and the short of it is, I'm looking out for our listener, and I don't think our listener wants to hear somebody some fat cat rich man. You know, it's gonna be a guy sit there and mumble into the microphone uncomfortably. Yeah. I'm listening. I'm thinking for our listeners, Brian.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
And as
another way.
As I said, I think the listeners would understand. Number one, I'm betting on the person who desperately wants, or at least wants enough to be on the show to donate, mm-hmm. is going to be someone who would be comfortable on the air. If they weren't comfortable,
they never are. They never are. I've seen it numerous times.
Like Dana VandeKamp?
No, she's great on air.
That's what I'm saying. You made my point for me. She's a listener, a fan, and she's on the air, and she's wonderful.
Yeah, I know. She's not donating large sums of money. Whatever, Brian. I've seen people.
But my point ultimately was, I think the listeners would understand. Like, oh, this guy did it for charity. It's a good cause. Watch your voice in the studio isn't the worst thing in the world.
There's no way we can do it now because it would be so uncomfortable for me after that little diatribe.
That's
okay,
right.
Let's get into our listener questions.
So thanks, but no thanks. We would have loved to.
I came up with alternates, which you said no to.
You have not come up with a good alternate.
Yeah, I did. I said they could sit in there and watch.
That's right. You said they could sit and watch our show.
Yeah. Sounds good. I said they could have a spot, anything that they're plugging, because you know if they have enough money that they have some kind of business, you know, they like that. Mm. So they could go see a movie with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they could give their review and we will relay it.
I wanted to give away auction off something that was actually some of what really any listener of the show could enjoy. As opposed to you have to be a business.
Yeah, but all the listeners will not.
Or you have to live close.
Let's get into the listener questions.
Let's do it.
Let's move back.
Logan's got some questions from the listeners. Logan, how did you call these
questions? For the record, Logan agreed with me.
There were various ways that listeners could have sent in their question, but like Ren Mulligan here emailed contacttfv@gmail.com and asked, have you ever dramatically changed your opinion on a film after repeat viewings in your adult life? If so, what was that film?
Anderson, do you have an answer?
Yeah, I've actually mentioned this a number of times. I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but The Big Lebowski.
Same answer.
Did not really.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, I was thinking
what?
About.
We're having a crossover on the very first question.
Don't but like. It was Big Lebowski where I saw it in the theater, and I was like, not quite sure what I saw. It was just after Fargo, or their first film after Fargo, and I was like, not quite sure what that was. And then it's become the classic that it's become.
You know, back in the day, I would have a collection of directors that I would go see their movies a lot of the time. The very opening weekend, or for earliest I could see it on the Friday that it was released. Of course, that list gets more expansive each year. I'm following more and more directors as I grow older, and I get more and more people. But the Coen brothers were one of the first. They were probably a group of maybe a dozen filmmakers back then that I would actively seek out their movies, do countdowns. Like, you know, I'd actually mark it on my calendar, that nerdy, and I would read all about these movies leading up to. And I remember being really disappointed after watching The Big Lebowski. And it makes sense because you go back and you look at it. It's such a convoluted story. There's so much going on that you miss most of the humor. You miss most of the interrelationships.
Yeah, there's a lot of plot happening.
The dude and Walter and Donnie, and a lot is lost. And I don't think I laughed much at all when I first saw it because I'm trying to keep up with the story. Once you learn the story, more on that later. But that's so funny that we both have a bit.
I agree with everything you said. It's a movie that bears repeated viewings.
Plus, I saw it at a really shitty theater with a really dim bulb.
Mm.
Remember this one theater I used to go to, and they'd have these old, worn-out bulbs?
Wouldn't it be funny if you and I went to the same theater to see it?
No, it wasn't.
Was it in Santa Monica?
It was at a mall.
Was it in Santa Monica?
Nope.
Okay. Logan, next question.
On Facebook.com/TheFilmVault, Thomas B. commented, what constitutes 10 out of 10, or 5 stars, 5 out of 5, etc., and do you guys think that it's graded on a curve by genre? For instance, calling Blade Runner a 10 out of 10 dystopian movie, since there aren't any better dystopian movies, but calling Goodfellas a 9 out of 10 gangster movie, since Godfather exists, mm-hmm. even though Goodfellas is arguably better than Blade Runner.
It's an interesting proposal. For me, I prefer, if I had my ultimate choice, to grade movies literally with a letter grade, because it's a frame of reference that everyone knows. Everyone who went to school and got a report card knows what a B plus is and knows what a C minus is.
That's the way Entertainment Weekly does it.
What you think of their reviews notwithstanding, that standard that we all understand, I like. What's 3 stars to you is not 3 stars to me. What does that mean?
You can't translate.
It's kind of arbitrary. Is 2 stars...
A
bad movie? Yes. Out of 5 or out of 4?
Well, it depends.
Okay.
Could be out of 3.
I like the letter grades. That's a little more. And I think what do you think?
I'm going to say that Goodfellas is arguably better than Godfather. What do you think of that?
That argument can be made.
As far as a rating because of a genre, no, I don't think so. I don't like to behold a movie to its genre. It's easy to sometimes give a movie a few breaks to its classification. Like, it's based on a comic, so you can give it a break.
Or
and it's a horror film where they're really extreme low budget. But a movie's a movie at the end of the day, and it's going to be either really good and do something memorable and leave you somewhere, or it's going to span across all genres. It could be a bad or a good movie. Mm-hmm. So, no, I give movies breaks, but I don't think that we give it a 5 out of 5. Because it's a horror movie, or of horror movies, you know what I mean?
I agree with you. I definitely agree with that, and I agree that genre is far less important. For me, the standard is, yes, you're right, is it memorable? Is it something I think I'm going to remember or stay with me? Is it a movie that I still think about? And also, what is the movie trying to accomplish? Like, a little comedy like
Does
Clerks.
It hit the mark?
Yeah, you judge it differently than you would judge Goodfellas, because it's trying to do one thing, and if it accomplishes that thing, that's a sign of a good movie. Whether or not that thing is big or little, if it accomplishes it, that's the thing.
And the most important things in when grading a movie or rating a movie, original idea, this is for me. Original idea almost always is one of the most important things to me. And, you know, there's plenty of movies that don't feel like they're that original, but they actually are when you think about the way they're set up. Clever concept, memorable characters, quotable characters. Amusing characters, obviously character-based movies, very important to me. And without execution, much of that becomes moot anyways.
Interesting.
Execution.
Moot.
Yes.
All right, Logan, what's next?
All right, Brian D. writes to us on Facebook asking, if you could watch one movie again for the first time, which one would you choose?
Anderson, well, you must get asked this question a lot.
Dark Knight.
Really?
It seems like an easy answer, and it's fairly recent, but Dark Knight in IMAX, as far as just pure movie-going experiences. Mm-hmm. I could be douchey and say Midnight Cowboy. The first time I ever saw that on the big screen, I was completely moved. It was the first time that I ever realized I wanted to write as well. Mm. But Dark Knight in IMAX, seen it this recently, the fact that it had that kind of impact, I felt like a little boy seeing a movie for the first time. It was unfucking believable. I've said that it felt religious to me. Mm. I saw it 5 times in the IMAX theater, and goddamn, I would love to be able to go out and do it right now.
That'd be great.
Like, if it was playing and it was starting in 10 minutes, I might leave right now.
There are many films I could answer with this question. I mean, there's a lot of, first-time experiences that were fantastic. For me, I would like to see Pulp Fiction again for the first time, and the reason being, when I first saw it, I was 15 years old, and I wasn't mature enough to really... I knew I'd seen something interesting, but I was like confused by certain parts. I was like, why was there a gimp? Like certain parts confused me.
Were you scared?
Certain parts I loved. And I kind of I saw it so many more times after that I started loving the movie in stages. Like I appreciated new things about the movie. And by the end, by the 5th or 6th time I saw it, I loved the whole thing and I appreciated it. And I was in my 20s or whatever. But for those first couple times, I was just confused. But I was like, that's a really interesting movie. I want to see it again. And I wish I could see it. I wish I would have been older and more mature when I saw it for the first time.
I tainted that movie for myself.
Yeah, because you were so excited about Reservoir Dogs.
So excited. Well, I was watching Reservoir Dogs. Yeah. And I was reading so much about Pulp Fiction. I thought it was going to change my life. Mm-hmm. I had the soundtrack before the movie came out. I knew the entire soundtrack. I was listening to all the songs. It fucked up the movie. By the time I saw it, there was no way it could live up to the hype.
That's a good point. That's a weird way to see a movie, too. Like, you're almost filling in, like, coloring in the...
Having all the songs in my head, I think, was the biggest mistake. Biggest mistake.
Yeah, because that soundtrack especially kind of comes out of nowhere.
But
a lot of parts of it.
Dark Knight, original idea. A lot of original ideas in Dark Knight. And obviously, the execution was there. Going back to the last question, so...
Okay.
What's the next question there, Logs?
On the contrary to that question, Eric K. on Facebook asks, what movie have you seen the most times?
Is that contrary?
Well, kind of. It's one viewing as opposed to
right,
several.
You. I got you, buddy. That's easy for me.
Oh, what is it?
Yeah, Sandlot.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
The Sandlot. I saw The Sandlot because when I used to work at the video store for like a year or a year and a half, that's
every shift I had, I would just put it on a loop because it was you're allowed to have it on.
Okay.
And it was a great movie. Put me in a good mood. Still does.
There's so many answers.
You know what? At camp, just a couple weeks ago, one of the kids at camp, probably like an 11-year-old kid. His nickname was Smalls from the movie. Yeah. A lot of kids are still loving The Sandlot.
Really?
It's holding up.
How about that?
Despite what you say.
I don't like it as much as you.
No.
I don't like it anywhere near as much as you.
No, it's because you're a cold-hearted bitch.
I'll say maybe The Godfather for me, only because it's on TV all the time, and I'm almost compelled to tune in every time it's on. Mm-hmm. So I am I'm so intimately familiar with just the ins and outs and little, oh, this is the part where Tessio does this, and this is the part where Barzini gets shot. And it's a movie that's comfortably, it's like a warm blanket.
Not me.
No?
I've probably seen it all the way through all of them, like twice, three times. Sandlot, I've probably seen, I'm not kidding, like 70, 80 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Sounds awful.
It's been years, though. All right.
Jamal D. on Facebook asks, since we have a New York Times bestselling author and a top shelf short film director, when will you two make a movie?
Who's the top shelf? Oh.
No.
Anderson?
No.
When are we making a movie?
No.
When are we making a movie together?
My answer to this is just no. I know it's not a yes or no question, but my answer is no.
I'll allow you to adapt a scene from my book.
Oh, that'd be great. Skull Crusher galore.
It is. It is like it's like Inglourious Bastards, like rewrites history. I die in the end. I get stomped.
I'd be like, Gaspar, no, you got nothing on this. He's being raped as his skull is being. Oh, okay, that's terrible. Too much. I'm sorry.
The answer,
that was not in the book.
That was
loosely based on shrinkage.
Inspired by true events.
No, we're not a match made for the screen.
I disagree.
Mm-mm. Oh, what?
What about like?
How about I write something and you direct it? That'd be good.
That'd be great. What about remaking?
No, it would not be great.
What about like remaking like Lethal Weapon or remaking like?
Oh, like you and I on the screen?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No. Terrible.
No.
No, Brian.
Okay.
No. Come on. Have some couth. You have no couth. All right. What's the next question?
Timothy F. writes to us on Facebook. When will we have a TV vault?
That's a good question.
And also, when did you realize you loved movies?
Two part of it.
I realized it was much better than TV.
Very separate.
I cannot answer the TV vault.
I'm waiting for Logan to get his shit together.
That's never going to happen.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know how to answer this. When did I realize I love movies? I don't know. When I first fell in love with the medium. I was a young boy. A young balding boy.
1986, and I've talked about it before, and I'm not going to go in length, but it was Platoon, 1986.
Yeah. You saw the theater how many times?
13. And I just kept going back because I couldn't believe that I was actually immersed in that. Wow. That compelled. I mean, I'd seen so many movies at that point because my dad just take me to all sorts of crazy movies, but never had I seen something that I was so afraid of and entertained by at the same time. It's just what Oliver Stone, how he depicted the Vietnam War and just war in general and the two sides and the story within the story and all the characters. I loved it. Loved Platoon.
Okay.
Made me terrified of war and fascinated by it at the same time.
I've only seen Platoon once. In between us, we've seen it.
Yet.
Between us, we've seen it 14 times.
Yeah. It's a great fucking movie.
I gotta see it again.
So good.
Okay.
Tom R. asks, which films would you say get better and better every time you watch them?
You know what was just on TV before I left for the Film Vault tonight was The Game. And movies like that that have intricate plots, sometimes a twist, or just sometimes require some unraveling. Like the one I thought of for the answer to this question was Go, because it's an intricate plot, and once you see it over and over again, you're like, oh, that part is foreshadowing that, and that in the background is when this happens. It's nice when you can see that in a good movie when you see things sort of coming full circle.
I'd almost have the exact opposite answer to that, because a lot of those movies are so dependent on the twist that the rest of them don't really add up, unless it's a very good movie. And also, Go has a lot of fun comedic characters.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of other things going for it. So, but like,
but that's what I'm saying. I agree with you. Is a lot of times you watch a movie more than once and it falls apart. But the good ones, i.e.,
but I would think the comedies for the most part. Actually, any good movie, any movie you love, it's like almost like a song. I think we talked about this maybe the last time we did listener questions. Because some people are just, my brother's one of them. He doesn't understand. My wife, she has no understanding why I would want to watch a movie more than once. I don't understand. Why would you want to watch that again? You've already seen it.
Christy forgets almost everything she sees in a movie, and many times will start to watch a movie and be like, oh, I saw this.
Oh, yeah. She saw it probably without any kind of soundtrack over an old man's shoulder on a plane. That's how your wife watches
movies right now over someone's shoulder.
But they're a really good movie. The one that you love is like a song, and you can sing along to almost. Like you anticipate your favorite riff, but you're like, you get to sit back and like enjoy performances because you know where the movie's going. You know what I mean? You don't have to worry about what's happening next.
Yeah, well, here comes
your brain's
awesome
working in a completely different way,
yeah,
where you're just kind of relishing in the greatness that's before you. Some of my favorite movie, actually, probably most of my favorite movie watching experiences are movies that I've already seen before.
Really?
Yeah, love it
because you can soak it in.
Just soak it in, and it gives you this feeling like everything's all right because you know what's up. Because my life is so goddamn. Most of our lives are so chaotic and hectic, and you don't know what's next. It's really comforting to watch a movie where you know what's going to happen next. Especially
I agree with that. Especially like I said with Go, I just thought of Mission Impossible, which I really liked, the first one from 1995. I was, like you said with Lebowski, I was so wrapped up in trying to keep up with the plot that by the time the movie ended and I saw it again for the second time, whatever it was, a year later, I was like, it's a fucking good movie. I'm glad I can pay attention now that I would worry about who's double-crossing who and who's trying to sell the knock list to who. It's like, no, just keeping up with the plot took a lot of brain power.
It's just like Philip Seymour Hoffman would have so many great, where you're just waiting for him to do like one little twitch or, you know, one little thing. And it's like, especially if you're watching with a friend, you're like, oh, here it comes. And you like, they do it and they're, it's always going to be the same. They're never going to let you down. It's not like, oh, he had a bad performance that time. No, because it's solidified on the screen in this little format and it gives order to the world. I love it. I love it. Just being able to have something that's predictable and that you can have.
And you know it's good.
Yes.
Yeah.
It gives me peace and order in the world. Thank God for movies. I think I'm getting...
Put on a t-shirt.
Thank God for movies.
Thank God for movies.
I really do think I am addicted to them. I don't notice it until like I go to camp and I'm gone for like a week and I can't watch a movie for a week. Mm. And like I feel a little bit like off. And then I watch one and it's like, ah, everything kind of clicks back into place. It's weird.
Huh.
Am I addicted? All right.
If you got to have an addiction.
Not a bad one. Until I go blind. Then I'm fucked.
At Indie Sarah, who regularly writes to us at the Film Vault, asks, what film had the biggest fluctuation, good to bad, or vice versa, from first watch to second?
That's a tough one. Your dog's snoring over there.
My dog is snoring. Yeah. It's very funny. For me, I think a lot of the recent superhero movies that get very well reviewed and they're big hits especially don't hold up well. Like, I'll come out of Iron Man 2 or Iron Man 3 or Man of Steel or Amazing Spider-Man and be like, yeah, I guess that was pretty good. And I'll watch it again and I'm like, no, that was a huge piece of shit.
Wow.
But it's weird how it almost floods. It almost is a tsunami of sight and sound where you're like, wow, that was impressive. And then you're like, wait, it wasn't a very good movie. Like, that's what I get a lot from these recent superhero movies.
I'm going to cop out of this one. Sorry, Indy Sarah. I mean, other than Big Lebowski, I don't really have anything.
Lebowski,
if I don't like the movie to begin with, I'm rarely in a position where I'm going to, you know, watch it again. There's too many good movies. There are too many movies I haven't seen that I'm not going to watch. Go back and revisit a movie I didn't like the first time. Unless I'm forced to, like you made me watch Magnolia again recently. It was pretty much what I kind of thought.
It was brilliant.
Yeah. It was the same, like, roller coaster, like, loved parts, disliked other parts. Liked it a little bit more this time around, but it's rare that I don't like a movie the first time, and I even find myself, the only reason why I went back to see The Big Lebowski again, or why I've seen Eyes Wide Shut 3 times now, is because I really like the guys that made it. Or the ladies!
Let's be honest, guys.
Mm-hmm. We need to talk about Kevin.
Oh, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Outlier.
Jane Champion, she made some movies.
Logan, next question.
From Michael K on Facebook, what movie in your lifetime have you watched and in your opinion had either the perfect ending or most unique ending?
Can you think of one, Anderson?
Without spoiling.
Yeah, Brad.
Oh shit, next question.
I always go to Spanish Prisoner is a movie that I
solid choice.
Thoroughly disliked throughout the first 90% of that movie and then the last 10% caused me to like walk out talking about how it's the best movie of the year, one of the best movies of the year. By the end of the year, it was one of my favorite movies of that year, and I really disliked it.
Do you remember if that was on your list? We did a list a while ago called Top 5 Bad Movies with Good Endings. I don't know if that, I mean, I think that's a good movie personally. My choice is, my favorite ending was a movie from, I think, last year. All Is Lost has the most beautiful ending I've ever seen in a movie. I loved it. I still think about it to this day. Take Shelter, also very good.
I think.
But by the way, J.C. Shandor, that's where it came up again.
Yes,
and All Is Lost.
You said that it was going to come up again. I'd have to say
beautiful ending.
The last 5 minutes of 6 Feet Under, probably the greatest ending of
it. TV Vault.
Yes, but it's TV Vault. It's very cinematic.
Okay.
Holy shit! I bawled.
Okay.
I bawled. was very. I didn't bald like you. I still have my hair.
Yeah,
but I cried.
You are heavily. Not bald, but you did.
But
bald.
I was bawling.
Okay,
one watching that. Holy shit, Brian! Unbelievable. Perfect ending. Too bad it's a fucking show, so it doesn't work here. 6 feet under.
Okay.
All right.
I got it.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to give you one more question.
God damn it.
Wraps for the night.
Wait, we're wraps for the night?
Yeah, we'll do one more, and then we'll save the rest for another time.
Okay. What? No.
You want to keep going for another hour?
At least 2 hours.
Let's do one more.
Chuck S. on Facebook asks, whose rating system do you like the best, and is there one that you think more closely matches your taste in movies? Also, how would you design your own rating system?
Let's do another one after this, because this is similar to my I would like letter grades. That's my favorite system, because everyone knows what a B plus is. Everyone knows what a C minus is.
You think kids in Africa do?
It's a good point.
I don't know why Africa.
Not they have the internet.
France? You think? They probably do.
They probably do.
The Netherlands?
Do you have any thoughts on this?
They probably do. Yeah, I think Fuckflix has it very close.
Mm.
Very, very good. Just
their predictive rating is actually
the algorithm that they use for yourself, which is unique because you're not just reading someone's review and seeing what their take on it is, but they actually spit back and they obviously, as most everyone knows, they predict for you as well. But I also think that I have to say that mine is pretty good.
What is yours? Yay, nay, nay?
No. I got the must watch.
Okay.
Should watch, could watch, should not watch, do not watch.
What happened to yay and nay?
But like, and I go into a little further. Like the must watch, that 5 out of 5 is see in the theater, Brian, if possible, buy it or pay for rental.
Wow.
Like that. This is telling you, like, you know, giving you an idea of like what monetarily it is worth.
Okay.
You know what
I
I'm
like
saying?
Like that, yeah.
Should watch, which is 4 out of 5, worth a theater visit or sending away for. Okay, sending away for, okay. Which is a big thing, right, with the fuck flicks. Because, you know, is it worth sending away? Murder Party, worth sending away for, okay. I say. Worth sending away for. Could watch, 3 out of 5. If it's on a pay channel or if it's streaming for free,
you can
worth checking out. Yeah, and then you can, you know, you're not going to lose anything if you have push stop. You're not into it after 10 minutes, right? Should not watch. Only if family or friends insist.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be a dick and be like, "Hey guys, we're not going to watch this because it's that bad." You can go along
You're
going to be forced.
If it's family movie night,
do not watch. Was 1 out of 5
under no circumstances.
Don't allow friends or family to make this mistake.
Wow,
I think that kind of says it all.
Okay,
right?
I like that. That's good.
Yeah, fuck flicks and mine
combined. All right, look, one more.
Last question comes from Eric Fusco on Facebook. He asks, "What movie that was assigned to you by the other, do you wish you could unwatch?"
Oh,
wow.
Easy for me.
What is it?
Babies.
What's wrong with babies?
No need for babies.
Of all the movies. Delightful.
No. It was not a movie, Brian. That was a series of vignettes. Worse than Just
Actually,
Friends.
Actually, no, it's funny. Speaking of not
a movie. Just Friends, at least that gave us the dancing scene.
That's delightful.
At least it gave us the gift that keeps on giving. Why are the fuck are they dancing? Babies gave me nothing.
That's funny you mentioned that, not a movie, because I was assigned a film that wasn't really a film.
What's that?
It was called Fred the Movie.
Mm.
And
no, it has a plot.
Here's the thing.
It has production.
You've assigned me some very bad movies.
I have.
S. Darko.
Uh-huh.
But at least with really bad movies,
yeah,
I can bring them up in conversation. Like, oh yeah, Donnie Darko, that's a great movie. Hey, you know there's a sequel? It's really, really bad.
Hey,
I saw
it. I know this.
Hey, it's really, really bad. I actually saw the sequel. It's terrible. It's called S. Darko. It's about his sister. That's a little bit of information. Fred the Movie was not only not a movie, it was just a waste. And it was one of the very few times I literally wasted my time watching.
Yeah, I was very angry with you when I signed you that. Plus, you didn't have
That will never benefit me in any way.
It kind of does. You see what a horrible kids movie is.
It's not even a movie.
It's a movie. All right. Why don't we do the video? Why don't we do the next and last question? The next one's coming.
You want to end on a happy
note? Well, we should get into a little, you know, interpersonal stuff, I think.
All right,
then. Promised earlier.
At Nick R. Lindsay.
Yeah, Nick.
Asks, what are the best and worst things that each other do on the podcast and off the air?
I don't know what that means.
Oh, I didn't consider the best. Damn it.
Andrew, why don't you go first?
I didn't consider the best.
Why don't you go first?
Well, Nick, good question. My answer would be Brian's smuggly ways.
Okay.
And overall lack of understanding his fellow man.
Hmm. Wow. Lack of understanding fellow man.
Here is over to his everyday life.
I'm trying to raise money for brain tumor patients.
It makes me sad. Yeah. Brian, would you be doing that if you didn't have one yourself?
I have a connection to the community.
You would not be doing that.
If I had cystic fibrosis, I'd be raising money for that.
Right. Whatever goes back.
Oh, that's
Brian.
Right. It's, yeah. You realize I'm not getting any of the money.
It's like going out there raising money for bald white men.
That's right. That's my next call.
Also known as the skinheads.
That's right.
Aryan Nation. All right, my favorite thing about Brian is his upbeat attitude, even if it is just a thin veneer. I appreciate it.
Very
in times
thin.
When I'm feeling
translucent.
If I'm not focusing, I just let myself kind of bathe in the glory that is his thumbs up in the air. I can buy it. I can buy it if I don't really.
Everyone likes thumbs.
Try to pierce.
Separates us from the animals.
No, Brian's a very smart guy, and I enjoy working with him once a week.
You know what I have here? For Anderson, best on air.
Oh, no. This is on air.
Well, he said on and off, but best qualities? You get incredibly passionate about the things you care about, both movies and otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way you reveal personal information about yourself, like when you said, you're streaming tears.
Yeah, balling.
But unlike you know what I said for worst quality?
Oh, no. You're making me feel like a dick now over here. I shoot down your idea to raise money for the...
Worst quality. Nothing. Anderson's perfect. My pal Anderson is perfect.
Well, for Mac T asked who's your idol, I wrote Brian.
No.
I did.
I wrote Brian, too.
Did yours also... We're so similar. Does yours also have a bunch of dots, and then it says S? So it's Brian's.
Oh.
And then the word tumor after?
Oh, come on.
Because that'd be mean to yourself.
If you're terrible. Not funny. Thank you, everyone, for writing in your questions. Sorry we couldn't get to all of them, but they were all very good questions. We'll save some for a future episode. Logan, how about we sprinkle in a question every once in a while?
Sure.
How about that?
We're going to do that with this. But then we always have to have this ready.
Well, people can keep tweeting us their questions, Facebooking their questions.
Yeah, because we should have had more time to the show. You know? Let's see if we can hit the three-hour mark. Huh?
Like I said, nothing about you I don't like.
If you can see his smugly face right now.
So smugly.
Because he knew. It was a good call, Brian. Good call.
Thank you, Owl from Geneva, Illinois. They are InspectorOwl.com, featured artist of the week. Check them out at AndersonandBrian.com. Thanks to Matt Birkenbile. That's a good name. Matt Birkenbile for doing the fan art this week. Go to AndersonandBrian.com to see that and check out a list of all the films we talked about, which wasn't that many. Comment on our episodes, give us a comment or two. Check us out on Facebook.com/TheFilmVault, Twitter @TheFilmVault. If you're feeling charitable, go to AndersonandBrian.com or BrianBishop.com to donate to the Brain Tumor Walk. Save Ferreira's back. How's that going?
It's going good. We just did our first episode.
There you go.
Or I guess 2 weeks ago we did our first episode.
Nice. And
we do it for Van Gogh.
Just a reminder, everybody, MeUndies.com. They're a sponsor on the show. We like their product. We endorse their product because they make good underwear. You need good underwear for your life.
It's true.
It's true.
Now that the show's over, perfect time. Before the show actually ends, you could actually go online and pick some up.
Yeah, now you're prompted. Now it's like, this is the time.
It's like, remember way back when we were talking about MeUndies? Still talking about them.
That's right.
And like I said before, and I wasn't lying, the wife saw them. Mm-hmm. They weren't on me when she saw them.
What pattern did you get?
I got the stripey ones, remember? It was very awkward because you brought them in. You're like, here, I got some undies for you. I'm like, Brian.
They're like lightly used.
This is very strange. Lightly used. What?
Lightly. I said lightly.
But I was holding them up and I was packing actually for camp. And the wife actually said, she said these exact words. I'm not lying. She said, honey, you can't bring those boxers to camp. They're too sexual.
That's an endorsement.
She said it. I brought them.
Go to MeUndies.com/TFV before September 1st and get 20% off your first order. That's right. 20% off your order. When you go to MeUndies.com/TFV before September 1st. They guarantee you're going to be happy with them. Trust me, once you feel MeUndies on your body, you're never going back. Yeah.